Avos Perek Aleph, Mishnah Tes Vav 115, and now we come to Shammai. Shammai, of course, the counterpart to Hillel. He was Hillel's Av Bezdin. And the Gemara says that he was a Kapdan. Kapdan means someone who is strict and exacting. And I think people tend to sort of not like, quote-unquote, not like that personality type. Maybe they sort of aren't in love with Hillel as a person and the thought of him. And I think maybe that's a bit of a mistake, besides the fact that he was, you know, from the greatest of the great in terms of his moral standing, his Torah standing and the like. I think we're giving Shammai short shrift. I think Shammai is a kapdan. He doesn't brook nonsense. But you'll see from our Mishnah that he actually what he's advocating here really is serious, but wonderful. And indicative of a person who's a truly, deeply good person and a caring person. And just because he's a kapdan, we shouldn't think, you know, he's strict and exacting. We shouldn't think that he isn't warm or caring or good, chas v'shalom. Now, Shammai comes to become one of the leaders of the Jewish people during essentially the time of Hill, or perhaps a little bit before. He replaced a man named Menachem. We don't know much about Menachem, the previous of Bezdin. But Menachem went in service of the I'll call it the king, if you will. That might be Herod, who actually was a king, or Antipater, his father, who actually wasn't technically a king, but he was a procreator, whatever it was. When Menachem left, Shammai took his place. Now, Shammai had a school, and he was an elitist. That's clear from Avos Rav Nasan. He would only let the best into his school, select students who were brilliant, had their acts together, were wealthy to the point they could afford to learn all day, every day, and not worry about making a living. And the Gemara bottom line says that the Talmidei Beis Shammai, the students of his school, were mechadidei tfei, which means they were sharper, they were smarter, they were the elite, undeniable. Nevertheless, the halacha is going to follow the legacy of Beis Hillel, the competing school. Apparently, Shammai had his school going in Yerushalayim when Hillel came to town and set up his school. So he had a separate, I'll call it competing school. Hillel was much more populist. He let everyone in. And because of that, the numbers of students that Hillel had were much more than the number of students that Shammai had. And for that reason, in general, the halacha follows Beis Hillel. He was the majority, and the rule is that Acheram Lahatos, the majority, rules when you have the convention of the Sanhedrin, let's say, and how they're going to posku. Now, in the time of Hillel and Shammai, it was very difficult for the Sanhedrin to convene. You know, when Herod became king in 37 BCE, his first act, essentially, was to execute 46 members of the Sanhedrin. Okay, he totally he disempowered the Chachamim and made it essentially a risk to function as a Sanhedrin. And for that reason, there were few times when they could convene and resolve issues and actually, you know, take a vote after a discussion and rule. Which is why, from the time of Hillel and Shammai, who had just three disagreements amongst themselves, three machlokas, their students, who the Gemara says weren't mishamish them, didn't serve them sufficiently in terms of getting like the practical knowledge firsthand of how they operated in the halachic context. So the machlokas proliferated, disagreements proliferated, different opinions proliferated, and until the point is almost that there were two Torahs, says the Gemara. In any case, the halacha follows Beis Hillel usually because they were more, but not always. There's a very famous Gemara, Mesechta Shabbos Yud Gimel, talks about the time that the students of Hillel and Shammai got together in a certain attic visiting someone, and they found out, oh, look, Beis Shammai was in the majority, and they actually made 18 enactments on that day. They voted on them, and the halacha follows Beis Shammai in those places. And other times it says, you know, Beis Hillel, sometimes even like was forced to sit at Hillel himself, I should say, was forced to sit at Shammai's feet in deference to Shammai being like the greater scholar. So that's Shammai for us. Now, we know very few of Shammai's students, really just four of them, Rabbi Tzadok ben Kohanim, Bava Mabuta, Dostai Ish Kfar Yavna, and Yoezer Ish Habira. And loosely speaking, however great these men may have been, and they're known for their piety, etc., extraordinary piety, in fact, but they don't play much of a significant role in the in the chain of the tradition. So here we have Shammai, Shammai says three things. I'll read them to you. He says, Osei sarascha keva, make your Torah fixed. I'll translate literally here. Emor ma'at vasei harbe, say little and do much. Vehevi mekabel es kol ha'adam besever panim yafos, and accept or greet or receive every person with a, you know, cheery countenance, with a smiling face. Now, Osei sarascha keva, make your Torah fixed. And according to the Gra, there were those of the Girsa of the version of the text being not just that your Torah should be keva, but also your malachtecha arai, your work should be, you know, kind of happenstance, the opposite, the antonym of kvius, of fixed. So the Bartanura's approach, his first approach, really is sort of a maximalist position, if you will, which is that a person should dedicate his time, both in quantity and quality, to Talmud Torah, and really push, you know, earning a living and the like to the side. And when he gets tired of learning, okay, then he'll work. But your life should be about your study as much as you can. There are those who sort of take it down one notch, and they say you can still fulfill this notion of Torascha Keva, your Torah being like the fixed point of your life. Even if it's not the fixed point in terms of quantity, it's not the what you spend most of your waking hours doing, you could spend most of your time, waking time, working, let's say, but still you could fulfill the notion of the Torah being kavu in your life, because qualitatively it is the centerpiece of your life, it's the central focus of your life, it's the centripetal force of your life which keeps pulling you back to it. And although maybe you have to work most of your waking hours, still your heart and mind is always focused towards and drawn towards and invested in and desirous of your Talmud Torah. That's a Bartanura's approach. I like to call it a maximalist approach. There's another approach, the Machs or Vitri's approach, let's call it, which really finds its place in halacha. So this would be like probably the more halachic approach, that the kvias of Torah, the fixedness of Torah, has to be that a person dedicates specific sacrosanct times in his day, every day, for Torah study. Okay, and that's the idea. There's a very famous, I think, very famous Gemara in Shabbos, Talmud Aleph. It says that when a person dies, there'll be like these six questions that the person is asked first and foremost, and one of those is kavata itim haTorah. Okay, did you set aside kavata itim? Did you set aside fixed times to learn Torah? And that's the idea. The idea is that it's sort of a fixed part of your routine, that is sort of because of its chashivut, its importance to you, it's sort of, you know, inviolate. It's not going to be, you're not going to push it out of the way. It's your top priority, and therefore it's your first and foremost in your mind in terms of your scheduling. It's kind of like, you know, this Rabbi Stefanski has this very popular Daf Yomi Shir. So one of his slogans is that his Daf Yomi Shir, it's not about the Daf, it's about the Yomi. Meaning it's not about the content of the page as much as it is that you are consistently day after day, every day, dedicating your time towards, you know, learning and growing in Torah. So that notion of kvias, of fixedness, and really it's a fixed specific time, is something which is certainly not this maximalist position. It's certainly something that every single person can and should do. And really, the Mishnah Brura, so that'd be called the Halacha Lamaisa, brings us down in Kuf Nun Hei, Dalet. He says, Tzaricha Adam liyachir es kavua b'chol yom. A person has to dedicate a specific fixed time in his day every day for Torah study. Shelo yasidenu b'shum pam. You never miss out on it. Every day, you don't, you know, if you schedule everything around that. Because first and foremost, you know, I learn my Daf Yomi Shir from 9:10 every morning. Vim era lo ones, and if something happens that for whatever reason he had no choice but to not attend the Shir, his fixed kavua Shir that day, for whatever reason, shelo hayachol hashlim hakvius shelo, and he simply couldn't fulfill his, you know, his usual obligation that he took upon himself b'yom on that, in that day, in that time. So then yehalav kamo chov, he will look at it as like a debt he has to repay. He's got a fixed obligation in his life. He must do this learning. That's about the yomi. And therefore, yeshli meno balaila, he'll make up for his lost learning in the nighttime. So just not just if it's convenient to learn when I have time. No, to the contrary. The first pshat Bartanura was learning is always what you're focused on and everything else is secondary. This is, well, I have more going on in my life than just learning, but learning is a central part of my life, and I dedicate a specific time of my day. And the truth is, since based on the pasuk v'yigisa b'yomim v'layla in Yehoshua, a person should study day and night. A person really technically should dedicate a specific time in his schedule, both morning and evening, nighttime, for Talmud Torah to fulfill this notion of kviyas. And again, it doesn't matter in terms of quantity. It could be your kviyas could be after Marav, I learn one halacha in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. I learn whatever it is. I just hear the halacha yomi from the Rav, or I learn a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. It doesn't matter. The point is, the essential point here is that it's kavu, it's fixed in terms of your mental orientation, and therefore in your scheduling, and your life revolves around this as like a centerpiece of your life. Okay. Next, the Shammai says, Emor ma'at vaseh harbe, say little and do much. So that means exactly that. The paradigm for this notion, of course, is Avraham Avinu, the famous story of Avraham. When he's greeted, he has to greet he receives these three guests. These angelic guests, he says, oh, let a little, the ekcha pas lechem, let's take like a morsel of bread. And the next thing he's kneading these massive loaves of bread, and he's not bringing bread, he's bringing, tongue with mustard and the like. The point is that amer ma'at vaseh harbe, he said little and did a lot. And I think what's driving this is, in terms of social psychology, every person is, actively, essentially at all times when he's in the public eye, focused on two things. He's trying to portray and convince people around him that he's good and competent. And every time that people get a glimpse, or you think people get a glimpse that you're not as good as you want them to think you are, or as competent as you want them to think you are, then you're ashamed, you're humiliated, you're embarrassed. So a person does so much in terms of his social posturing to make people think he's good and competent. But the Shammai is saying here that a person should stop focusing on looking good and just focus on being good. So say less and do more means stop talking about what you're going to do and how you're going to do it and letting people know what you're doing and just get the job done. Harry Truman famously said, it's amazing how much you can get done if you don't care who gets the credit. And that's the idea here. Stop talking what you're going to do and to convince people that you're doing the right thing, and just get on with the business of helping people and doing the right thing. And So now the third part of the mission, I'm going to come back and sort of tie this together in the end, because the Partanura does. Ve'evi mekablis kol ha'adam b'sefer parim yafos. You should receive every person with a cheery countenance, a smiling face. So the Partanura learns this in sort of a very limited way. He applies this specifically to when one is receiving a guest in his home. And at that point, whether the person is like a guest to feed or sleep, or if just someone's asking for money or something, the point is that when you, no matter what you're going to give to that person, if you do it with a sad face or an angry face, a dour face, so then no matter how much you give them, it's totally counteracted by the negative vibes you're putting out by giving the guy, the grumpy face. And therefore, it undoes it all. Instead, you got to give everybody a smiling face, and that, of course, makes the recipient of your host being their host or your goodness or your charity, whatever the story is, makes them feel good about it. And then it's, of course, something that's done right and is worthwhile and makes everyone feel good and everyone's a beneficiary. There are others who learn, like let's call it Tiferes Yisrael, who learns kind of how probably you want to learn it and how most people want to learn it, which is, we're not talking specifically about guests in your home, but anybody. When you encounter a person in the street, so you should greet them with a smiling face. You should be pleasant to deal with for everybody. And the Tiferes Yisrael speaks out, that doesn't matter whether the person is rich or poor, meaning no matter who is, so to speak, the giver or the taker of the transaction, that doesn't really matter. If this person is sort of needy and is someone who is a drain on your resources, it doesn't matter. Just put a smiling face on and receive them, as you'd want to be received. And he also says it doesn't matter if they're Jewish or non-Jewish. Similarly, every human being is a human being, and you should encounter and receive every human being, Jew or Gentile, with a smiling face. Why not? It makes them feel good, makes you feel good, and doesn't cost extra, so it's a win-win. Now, the Bartanura, he says that these three things, and I think if you now look at them in context, in the big picture, you see these are the kind of things that, yes, Shammai was a kavdam, but look what he's advocating for. He's saying, yes, my life, the centerpiece of life is Talmud Torah, so I I haven't got time to waste. I'm focused on Torah, but I don't waste time talking, but I'm advocating we should be doing. We should be, you know, doing a lot for the world, for people who need us, and be at the ready. So yeah, no time to talk, but all the time in the world to do and help other people. And more than that, to do it with a smiling face, a cheery face, you know, not just about doing, but it's about doing in a way that's pleasant, you know, pleasant for the recipient as well. So that to me sounds like, you know, not just a good person, but a likable person, right? Maybe a serious person, a very serious person. He has a seriousness of purpose, but not someone who chalila we should think of as being a tough, grumpy old man, God forbid. Now, the Bar Tanura, he says that these three things parallel a pasuk, a verse in Yirmiyah, Jeremiah, and I think it's really instructive to think about this for a second. The verse he's talking about, Yirmiyahu, Perek Tes, Pasuk Chav Beis, 9:22, it says, Ko Amar Hashem, this is Yirmiyahu talking, Hashem said to him, Al Yishalel Chacham B'Chochmaso, the wise person shouldn't exalt, praise himself for his wisdom, Va'al Yishalel Hagibor B'Gvuraso, and the mighty person shouldn't, you know, praise himself, exalt in his mightiness, Va'al Yishalel Ashir B'Oshro, and the wealthy person shouldn't rejoice, praise himself, exalt in his wealth. So he says, the Bar Tanura says, that these three topics in Shammai are coming to address these three people, the Chacham, the Asher, and the Gibor, and to let them know that even if it seems like you've succeeded in your tchum, in your realm of expertise, don't feel like you've made it. So to the Chacham, the wise person who's, you know, very learned, so still, you're here to learn, and you should not think you're done the job. To the contrary, you should be koveya itim and set aside times, and really, maybe according to Bar Tanura, be'echas u'bekamas, learn day and night with you know, your time and your quality of your time you're dedicated towards Talmud Torah. It never ends. As for the ashir, you know, the wealthy person who can be bogged down into more being concerned about looking good than doing good. The point is, if you got wealth to circulate, you have what to give, you got to give it. So stop talking and start doing. You've been blessed with money. Don't praise yourself for the wealth. Put it to good use and spread the wealth. You know, do good deeds, good works for others. And as for the Gibor, so famously, else another Mishnah Pirkei Avos, Yezu a Gibor, who is the mighty person? Hakovish es Yitzro, a person who's in control of his himself, his urges. So there's probably nothing more trying of a person's good character, more frustrating, more, you know, niggling and pushing one's buttons than annoying people. People can be really annoying. They can frustrate you. They can disrespect you. They can harass you. They can waste your time. And it's only natural, human nature, to get frustrated and to get angry and lose one's patience and to, you know. But however much of a gibor you think you are, learn to be mighty in terms of control, and that even with the people who are the most irritating and annoying and demanding and time-wasting, you still receive them, kol hadam, every person, with a sefer panim yafos, with a smiling face. You have time for them, and you have patience for them, and no matter how much they would be potentially be irritating, you don't let them get to you, and even if they do get to you, you don't let them know they're getting to you. You don't show it. You be in control, you be a gibor, and keep that smile on your face.